First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
What's going on, America? It's Thursday afternoon on the Sports Map Radio Network. My name is Greg Frank. Riding from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 to 3 Central, here on Sports Map Radio. NBA Draft Day today. We'll get to that. A trade last night in the association. Chris and Peek from Yahoo Sports joins in about 30 minutes, covers the NBA draft. So we'll run through all of the different situations. Sounds like maybe we get some drama tonight, some chaos after number one. Charlotte, there's been some rumblings with that number two pick, perhaps with the New Orleans Pelicans. Of course, Portland and number three have been talked about for a while as possibly being moved. Houston at number four, how quickly do the Rockets want to accelerate things? So certainly there could be some movement and some, major changes and some overhaul, perhaps, with the rest of the NBA. So we'll see what the draft brings tonight. Rob Manfred speaks to Time Magazine. I always think it's interesting when you have big figures in sports do interviews with non-sports publications. Like, I always feel like GQ, we'd always get random interviews with guys talking to GQ magazine and Time magazine. I was wondering why we couldn't find the audio from Rob's interview, but he just gave an interview to Time magazine. And so he spoke about the Astros and like kind of they asked him to look back a little bit on the sign stealing scandal. So we'll get into that. And a couple things that just in general every year about the NBA draft annoy me. So all of that on the show today. But first, let's start with the trade that went down late last night, if you were still up or maybe you woke up to the news this morning, of the Washington Wizards, Boston Celtics, and Memphis Grizzlies. Three-way trade, which sent Kristaps Porzingis, the 23rd pick in tonight's draft, and a 2024 first-rounder to the Boston Celtics. Washington gets Tyus Jones, and Memphis gets Marcus Smart. And I don't know, it was kind of a weird trade. Like, the more you watched the Celtics over the last, 6, 7 years, they've been to four conference finals and one NBA finals with this group. And it really felt like Marcus Smart was as integral, just in terms of, like, he clearly wasn't their best player, but you felt that he was there to stay. He was kind of a staple of what the Celtics had been doing. And, you know, in a lot of ways, embodied the persona of one of those Patrick Beverley, Draymond Green type players that would get under the other team's skin, that would be a junkyard dog on the defensive end of the court, and, you know, occasionally would make some open shots, and, you know, you look up and say, Marcus Smart's got 14 points and 8 assists, and he's defending really well. And it all felt like he was as much ingrained into what the Celtics were doing as Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown were, even though he wasn't as good as those guys. So, and to that end, Adam Himmelsbach covers the Celtics for the Boston Globe, is reporting that Smart was, quote, shocked and noted that Smart loved Boston and wanted to retire there. Now, you can't let the emotions get in the way of the trade that clearly Brad Stevens feels makes the Celtics better. But it makes me wonder what was going on in that Boston locker room. And if Joe Mazzulla, who there were a lot of questions about this year, if he could handle it. Because Marcus Smart, I just laid out, like, kind of a better Patrick Beverley, a guard version of Draymond Green in terms of his, persona and the moxie and the attitude, right? And so maybe Boston felt that that in some way, shape, or form was problematic and that they needed a little bit of a culture change. Because on the, like, if this was like NBA 2K GM mode, it looks like a good trade for the Celtics. Because Kristaps Porzingis, I didn't know this, had a career-high 23 points per game average this past year for Washington. Now, you could argue that some of those are empty stats. But he also shot 38.5% from three. So they get a guy in Porzingis whose numbers last season were better than Smart's, and they get two first-round picks. And I guess what I'm saying is, again, given how much success the Celtics have had in the last 6-7 years, and given how much of a part of their culture it felt like Marcus Smart was, I wonder if something was going on in the locker room, or if Joe Mazzulla didn't like Marcus Smart. It just makes it's curious that he was traded, is all I'm saying. Even though you could argue that Boston comes out clean on the other side here, and this is a good trade for them. As far as the Grizzlies getting Marcus Smart, I actually think that this he kind of feels like a Memphis Grizzly type player. Go back to the Grizzlies teams that had Tony Allen, who was, ironically enough, also an Oklahoma State guy like Marcus Smart. Junkyard dog defensive type guy. Okay? And I don't know, maybe Memphis thinks, we get Marcus Smart in our locker room. Not only does Marcus Smart make us a better basketball team on the court, and he's an upgrade from Tyus Jones, but maybe this is the kind of player that will help us in terms of rehabilitating Ja Morant. Because Smart does seem to be a guy that wants to win, and a guy that I think you can probably build a good culture around. Which is why, again, I'm questioning Boston's inclusion. Maybe the Celtics just love Porzingis, even though he's going to play there on a player option, and you don't know if you're going to have him after 23-24. So I think it's still good for Boston because they get Porzingis in the two firsts, which always give you flexibility, and maybe there's more coming for the Celtics tonight. Or if they sit on that 23rd pick, they draft somebody, and they have the 2024 first-rounder that they got through with this trade. And so there's more flexibility that the Celtics have here in terms of future moves. The Wizards, like, what are they doing? I guess I know what they're doing in that they're rebuilding, but in trading Rui Hachimura, Bradley Beal, and Kristaps Porzingis in the last 6 months now, the Wizards got zero first-round picks. So, like, they're rebuilding without having high draft picks. They're going to be horrible next season, but usually you want, when you're rebuilding in any sport, you want to accumulate and hoard draft picks. Like, you want do what the Thunder did, where it's just they get a ton of more first-round picks than they can even carry. You know, and in baseball, you just want to get a ton of prospects. Like, the quantity isn't there for Washington. Like, what's Tyus Jones doing for them? So the move makes the least amount of sense for Washington, but I guess at the same time, they're thinking, well, even though it only ended up being Tyus Jones, they wanted to get out from Kristaps Porzingis in some way, shape, or form before losing him in free agency next summer, or even this summer, because it was a player option, so he could have declined the option and gone to free agency. Speaking of declining options, another move last night or early this morning, I saw it this morning, Chris Middleton will decline his player option and go to free agency. So a couple of high-end Eastern Conference contenders in the news in light of Chris Middleton declining. It was a $40 million option that he declined. So we'll see what kind of contract Middleton is in line for this summer in, what, a week? July 1st, the new league year opens. So what kind of market would there be for him? I mean, he's a nice player, and he's clearly the second-best player in Milwaukee. And what does he want? I mean, he did win a championship. So is he looking for a bigger payday or just more years from the Bucks? I don't know. New coaching change there in Milwaukee. So what kind of market will there be for Chris Middleton come free agency? And I know that this free agent class, a lot of the players have some, you know, checkered pasts, let's say, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Draymond Green. But somebody like Middleton feels like he's just kind of a nice player. Like, I don't really think of him as a locker room problem or somebody that's going to bring some toxicity to your culture. Like, he doesn't seem like one of those guys. So what does that kind of player go for? Like, he's like an overall solid player who I don't think anybody wants as their best player, but he's pretty good. So some news on the, and there's going to be more tonight, I'm sure. The Lakers made a trade. They moved up with the Pacers in the second round and gave them some cash. So I'm sure there will be more transactions. At least I hope. You know, I hope that this isn't just everybody sits on their picks and makes them, and you know, it's kind of a boring draft night. But we shall see. As it is draft night, and Victor Wembanyama is the talk of the NBA, talk of the sports world for that matter. And he had an interesting cut. He got asked about staying in France and not coming to America to play college basketball. So we're going to get to what he said on that front on the other side. And then obviously talking more draft with Kristen Peek from Yahoo Sports. Had her on just before the lottery. It was a good guest spot. So wanted to get her back today in light of the NBA draft tonight in Brooklyn. By the way, this event should move around like the NFL draft. We don't need to have it in Barclays Center every year. Have it. You can even have it outdoors in nicer northern summer climates. I don't think we need to have the NBA draft at Barclays Center every year, but that's just me. As I said, Wembanyama speaks on why he stayed in France. That's on the other side. First thing in sports, Sports Map Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Okay, Thursday afternoon, as we're back here. Penultimate Thursday in June, which I believe is always when the NBA draft is. Maybe it's sometimes the last Thursday in June. I know it's always a late Thursday in June. And, of course, the hype train surrounding Victor Wembanyama might be the first train that ever actually traveled across the Atlantic Ocean from Europe to the United States, with how much hype there was surrounding this French phenom. And, you know, before we get into the what he said, which I thought was interesting, Belmer and I were talking a little bit in show prep about how if, like, when you hear this amount of hype surrounding a prospect in any sport, does it make you root against the guy? And Victor Wembanyama seems like a cool guy. Like, I kind of like the way he talks, and he just sounds like a nice person. But an ounce of me, more than an ounce of me, would enjoy if he was a bust.
Hater.
Because, well, you're the Rockets fan. That would definitely enjoy it with him on the Spurs.
I mean, sure, but
I'm just saying, anytime there are premature coronations, I enjoy being able to tell people to pump the brakes and slow their rolls. And then when I'm right about that, it's like, hey, remember when you said that Victor Wembanyama is going to be the GOAT? And now he's made like one All-Star game or something. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just like, it's a fun thing to look back
on. But if you're wrong, do you say, man, I was wrong on
him? But like,
him.
I don't know that I'm saying that he's a bust. I'm saying I enjoy looking back on how crazy the hype gets on certain prospects and stuff.
And when it doesn't live up to it.
And when it doesn't live up to it. Like, it's just comedy for me. So, but again, it's a special night for Wembanyama. And he'll be the first pick tonight, and he'll be a Spur. And the lineage of French players in San Antonio has been well documented. And, you know, the other thing, and this is not just a Wembanyama thing, surrounding the draft, and I'm more of a college basketball guy. I like the college game more than the NBA game. But watching a lot of college basketball this year, we didn't have a lot of the one-and-done prospects that were, you know, even had the NBA crowd watching college basketball. You know, you had Brandon Miller, But, you know, after that, there's, like, Cam Whitmore from Villanova is going to go in the top 10, and Villanova didn't make the tournament. So there are different, like, this is a different vibe, I feel like, surrounding this NBA draft. And the last few years, we've seen the G League Ignite really be a viable American pipeline into the NBA. Jalen Green, Scoot Henderson tonight. And, you know, even last year, you know, when you watched a Duke game, you knew Paolo Banchero might do something. Chet Holmgren, Jabari Smith. Like, there were legitimate one-and-done prospects that I think are good for college basketball because you get the best NBA prospects in your game. And, you know, all those guys I mentioned were American-born players. Banchero's from Seattle. Chet Holmgren's from Minneapolis. And I think Jabari Smith is from Georgia. But we've also seen a lot of international players come over to America and play college basketball for a year. Joel Embiid did it. Ben Simmons did it. And he was not just, like, he came to prep school. I think he went to the Montverde before he went to LSU. Andrew Wiggins did it from Canada. I mean, the Canadian pipeline of college basketball players is actually pretty well documented. But obviously, Victor played in a pro league in France, and that's fine. We all have our own paths, but I think with the rise of the international player, because I mentioned Embiid, he did play college basketball in the United States, but Nikola Jokic did not, Luka Doncic did not, Giannis Antetokounmpo did not. And it does feel like the international player is on the rise, and the path that that player takes, like, I think in a good way, it's changing the way we look at some of these European prospects. Because for a while, even when Porzingis went third overall in 2015 to the Knicks, I think there was a perception of, oh, well, you know, Jan Vesely and Darko Milicic, and, you know, there were too many European busts. Belmer, how do you guys look back on Yao Ming's career? Like,
disappointing, right?
Really?
Because of injury.
Okay.
But because of injury.
Fair enough. And so Yao Ming was, he was obviously coming over from China, but he was maybe the best example that we had of an international player, Dirk Nowitzki, maybe even better so than that.
Yes.
Like, so, you know, there are some, but for the most part, I do feel like the stigma surrounding international players was a lot more negative 20 years ago than it is now. And Victor spoke a little bit about just, hey, there's a lot of options out there, and you don't just have to play college basketball. Here's what he said.
Sometimes I wonder what it would have been like if I went to college, more college than high school, you know, because high school basketball doesn't exist in France. It's like you play in a club or you don't play basketball. I feel like I would have loved going to college, especially, but high school too. The truth is, in the world, there's better leagues for a player that age than high school and college. Some places are just better for, you know, development. But the thing is, it's so far away that, I mean, for American players, is the better option to stay in the U.S. and just stay in the high school and college course. As you said, a lot of MVPs were foreigners. It just shows that the chances are increasing for foreigner players. The best basketball players are still in the United States.
He's kind of hesitating there. Still in the United States. Stopping short of... And honestly, in his defense, I mean, I remember I saw Lance Zierlein tweet this out. And when I saw it, I was like, he makes a good point. Who is the next American-born MVP in the NBA? I mean, you probably... A year ago, you might have thought maybe Ja Morant, but obviously, look what's happened with him the last year.
It might still be him, though, if he gets his act together.
Jason Tatum?
Nope. Mm.
Yeah. Jaylen Brown, is he good enough to be an MVP?
Not right now, he's not.
You know? LeBron's not going to win another MVP. You think about the best player. Kawhi's not going to play enough games to be an MVP. You know, it's a little weirder than you thought when, you know, you think about the best. There's still a lot of good American-born players in the NBA. And next summer, they should win the gold medal, I'm sure, at the Olympics again. But Kevin Durant's not going to play enough to be. Maybe Devin Booker? I, you know, I'm just kind of spitballing here. I think Dame Lillard's time window probably sailed to win an MVP. So it's the diversification of talent in the NBA in terms by nationality. Like I remember last year during the finals, I talked about how there were so many rising Canadian-born players in the NBA because Andrew Wiggins has had a nice career. Jamal Murray is Canadian. Chris Boucher, Lou Dort is a good Canadian. Like, there's a lot. And so I would still go to college if I was in America. Like, the G League Ignite thing seems to be more popular than it was a few years ago. But why not? Because tonight we're going to see the Thompson Twins. There are other G League guys as well go in the top 10. Why not be the best, the big man on campus for a year? That still sounds really cool to me. And if I can go to a UCLA or a Kansas or a Duke, even if it's for a year, and I can be the man at a storied program like that, I would still want to do that. But I'm biased because I've always enjoyed the college game a little bit more. And I think to Victor's point and to what, you know, the trend of the last few years has been more international players, G League players. There's just other ways to go about your ascension as a basketball prospect. And I don't think we would have been having this conversation even 10 years ago. We will take a timeout. Kristen Peek is up on the other side from Yahoo Sports as we will preview the draft with Kristen and run through all the ins and outs of tonight's event at Barclays Center. We'll take a timeout Thursday afternoon. First hour of First Name Sports rolls on after this on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, as we continue to wait on Kristen Peek, I think we have her now, NBA draft tonight in Brooklyn, and we do have her now. Kristen Peek joining us, covers the draft for Yahoo Sports on the Progressive Guest Line. Kristen, good to have you aboard again. How are you?
Hey, great. I'm happy to be here. It's a big night.
Yeah, I mean, so what's this day like for you? Obviously, you've been watching these kids all year, coming up with big boards, mock drafts. How's it feel when it actually, like, gets to draft day?
Oh, my gosh. This is my favorite day, favorite night of the year by far. I mean, it's also my busiest, and, yeah, you know, I'm on the phone constantly trying to figure out who's falling where, talking to a lot of teams, doing, you know, some media hits as well, but for me, I mean, it's not even, I've been covering them for a year. For some of these players, it's been 3, 4, 5 years. So it's like graduation. I love being able to interview them afterwards and seeing them all dressed up. You know, but it's the stress right now for these players who's not named Victor Wembanyama and you don't know where you're going. But even at 2, I mean, we're hearing all sorts of things between, you know, now Scoot's favored from the new management over Brandon Miller, even though he's been projected for a while to land there at number 2 to slide alongside LaMelo. So we'll see what happens. I expect this to be far from a chalk year, and yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of movement.
You know, I just finished talking about how it feels like the international player has risen quite a bit the last 5 to 10 years in the NBA, and some of those players did come to America and played a year of college basketball. Others have not. Obviously, the G League Ignite option has become more mainstream, and I am a college basketball junkie. I watch more college basketball in the winter than I do the NBA, and I'll admit, like, when it came time to look at the lottery, and like most casual draft junkies, I was not as in the know with some of these prospects. I had to familiarize myself a little bit more with the Thompson twins and some of these guys. So I'm just curious how you see this trend going in terms of G League, international. Are things like this, where top prospects are routinely not college basketball players, going to continue to happen?
Well, we're going to see the exact same trend next year, tell you, because there's at least two G League Ignite players and one international player, oddly enough, from France, that's projected in the top five. So we're not going to see it go away anytime soon. Get ready to watch some G League basketball next year. They've got a lot of young talent coming in, probably four potential first-round draft prospects. So that's always going to be, you know, kind of like a different avenue for players to go if they don't want to go the college route. But I also think, like, there's the college game isn't going anywhere. I mean, there's players out there. I was talking to, you know, one of the top juniors in the class and in high school, and I said, are you considering the pro route? And he said to me, I told my mom I would at least go to 1 year of college. So there's players like that. College will always be the option. But it is a trend that we're going to see more and more of as the in the coming years, especially particularly next year's draft.
So you say that you think this trend of G League players and international players not coming to America for a year, that will continue. But I'm just curious where you think name, image, and likeness at the college level fits into all of this.
I think, you know, that's helping. And not only is it helping with that in terms of, you know, making players think twice about going the pro route because they want to chase the money. I also think it's helpful in the way the players are returning after testing the NBA draft waters. I mean, we saw almost 200 players return after the deadline to because they know that the next 2 years are a little bit, there's a drop off in surefire talent and, you know, these potential all-star players and generational type players like Wembanyama. So, I think that's helping because you look at it, if you're a player and you're like, if I'm in the second half of the second round on a two-way, I can make more money at the University of Texas. I can make more money at North Carolina. And so they're weighing their options and they're returning to school.
You know, Kristen, I'm also curious when, and this seemed to be something that was a European like school of thought when it comes to the positionless basketball and Wembanyama being this, you know, super tall, super lengthy player that could have a jump shot that went out to the 3-point line. Was that also something that Europe was ahead of America on? And do you feel that just how young players are trained and developed now, whether it be in America or abroad, like this is just the new normal?
I don't know if it's a European thing or more of a Wimby thing. Like, he is just an alien. There's never been anyone or anything like him that I've seen, you know. And I covered, I called a lot of the color commentary. I did a lot of the color for the games that the NBA app streamed for Wimby. And, like, he would do something every game where I just, I mean, it blew my mind. I'm like, what? He did something new every single game. But I will say this. I think it's not necessarily a European thing. It's the way that the game is changing. And if kids at a young age are starting to make those adjustments, if you're really tall and lanky, but you become a solid ball handler and you extend your game past the 3-point line, you're going to be a threat. And we're seeing that with Wimby. We saw it, of course, well, with Chet in college,
yeah,
and hopefully this year, the rookie year. And we're going to see it next year with Matas Bezelis, who's right now the projected number one pick coming out. He's a 6'10", basically like 1-2 guard.
Wow. Yeah. So there's no shortage of opinions on Wembanyama and where he goes in the NBA and what his ceiling is. I'm curious, as somebody that's obviously watched so many of those games, you talked about the ones that were streamed, how do you pinpoint, like, if he's blank, that's a success?
I've asked him several times. I think the media, you know, they've asked him several times, like, how do you live up to all these lofty expectations? And he said the same thing every time. He said, I'm just trying to be the best version of myself. I don't know what that is yet. Nobody knows what that is yet, but I'm here to be the best player I can. I don't want to be compared to anyone. I just want to be my own player. So if that turns out being a mix between Kevin Durant and Rudy Gobert with the way he protects the rim and his outside shooting, then so be it. If he turns out just to be, you know, a Kristaps Porzingis and we were all wrong on him, then so be it. But to him, he's just worried about what he can control and what he can do, and he's excited to get to San Antonio and try to contribute right away.
All right. As far as Brandon Miller and Scoot Henderson, you talked about it, how there's been some back and forth there. As of this moment, how do you feel that goes, 2-3?
What I'm hearing is, you know, Michael Jordan is making the decision, and he's on his way out,
right.
But the new management coming in, they think that they cannot pass on Scoot Henderson and what he projects in terms of, you know, he can be the next great point guard entering the league. And so to pass on something like that because Brandon Miller fits better alongside LaMelo Ball, I think that's where the conversations are going. So I'm hearing that the new management is preferential. Like they like Scoot, but Michael Jordan and the old management prefers Brandon Miller. So when I talked to Brandon Miller, I said yesterday, I said, listen, did you get a promise? Did you or Scoot, did you feel one way or the other? And he said, no, it was all positive. And I said, okay, so when do you think you'll know if you're going 2 or 3? Are they going to call you ahead of time? And he said, I think I'll know 30 seconds before Adam Silver, you know, gets on the clock. So, I mean, I think it's going to be one of those up to the minute of when Charlotte's on the clock.
All right. Lastly, Portland, do you think they keep that pick? And if so, does it just come down to as simple as whichever player is still there? And other teams that you might you're intrigued by in terms of some moving and shaking? I know Orlando has those 2 lottery picks.
Yeah, I don't think Portland – I mean, the message coming out of Portland is they're not going to move that pick unless a, you know, star veteran top 30 player in the NBA is put on the table to insert alongside Dame. So I think they end up keeping the pick. You know, you have to remember Portland hired former ESPN draft analyst Mike Schmitz as their assistant general manager. He's very familiar in the scouting space. I mean, I think for him, it's for that when you look at that component alone, I would lean more towards them keeping the pick and taking either Brandon or Scoot, just because of what the talent projects this high at the draft. And you know, you don't ever want to be the one that gave up on and then fill in the blank player. So I think they keep it unless there's like a major player that's presented to them. And, you know, it's going to take a lot. I think it's definitely going to take more than like 2 draft picks in the lottery to trade up.
Sure. Yeah. All right. There she is. Kristen Peek from Yahoo Sports covers the NBA draft. Kristen, really appreciate your time. Enjoy the draft tonight.
Oh, thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, yeah, I think some of that stuff you hear her talking about with the potential of a trade involving the number 3 overall pick and the uncertainty surrounding the number 2 pick and even Scoot Henderson not knowing until 30 seconds before the pick is in. I mean, that certainly will create for an intriguing draft night after the obvious selection of Victor Wembanyama to the San Antonio Spurs. We will take a timeout. As I said, Rob Manfred speaks on looking back on the Astros sign-stealing scandal. We'll get into that next. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
You know, I talked about it earlier in the show when we teased our topics. Sometimes I wonder, well, why would that guy be talking to that media outlet? And I think the more I think about it, the more I kind of can answer my own question. Rob Manfred gives an interview to Time Magazine. And I think he knows if he's going to be asked about, you know, looking back on the sign-stealing scandal with the Houston Astros in 2017, that Time Magazine might not be asking the as many of the hard-hitting questions and as many of the, you know, sticking his feet to the fire type of questions as the regular baseball reporters that have covered the scandal from day one will. And, you know, it's almost like certain decisions are made by these athletes and figures in sports to address something that they feel like they need to speak on, but not face the music at the same time and not necessarily have to, as I said, answer those harder questions. And so perhaps Time Magazine is the perfect outlet for Rob Manfred to speak to with regard to the sign-stealing scandal. But he did say to them that if he could do it all over again with regard to the sign-stealing investigation with the Astros, he would not grant the Astros players immunity. And that was probably a mistake. But John Belmer and I were talking in show prep about the fact that immunity isn't, like, it's not just as black and white, oh, they have it or they don't. There was, under the old collective bargaining agreement, a lot of fuzzy rules regarding sign stealing and what you could do and what you couldn't do. And had he not granted the players immunity, there very easily could have been legal action from the players' union, because that's the thing here. It wouldn't have just been the Astros. We knew that this was going on with other teams, and this is a players' union thing where the union steps in and says, hey, hold on a second. The collective bargaining agreement does not state that you have the power to do this. And so we're going to fight this out in the courts, and our, you know, whoever the players are, in this case the Astros, we're not going to have them be suspended over this. And so I think Rob is giving the mea culpa almost 6 years later. Yeah, you know, like, I guess I, you know, probably shouldn't have done that one. Knowing that he's not going to be pressed further on, like, CBA stipulations from Time Magazine. And then this is his way of saying, well, you know, see, I finally admitted some wrongdoing here, and, you know, we can all move on now. When really, it's best if Rob should just shut up about this, okay? Because sign stealing was very widespread, and probably still is, for all I know. I really don't care, to be honest. And the other teams that were doing, I mean, gosh, Alex Cora got hired away from the Astros to manage the Red Sox, who won the World Series a year later. So Cora wins a World Series with the Astros as the bench coach in 17, then wins the World Series as the manager with the Red Sox in 18. Then when this all happens, he gets suspended for a year, and they're like, hey, come on back. You can manage again. A.J. Hinch, Detroit's like, we'd love to have you. But supposedly Jeff Luhnow can never work in baseball again, which I never understood. And I do think that sign stealing was pretty widespread in the game. We don't have a full, like, Mitchell Report level investigation the way we had with the steroids and performance-enhancing drugs, but go with me on the analogy here. Sign stealing is to Rob Manfred what the steroid era was to Bud Selig. And you know what? I never want to hear Bud Selig talk about the steroid era. Why? Because we all know that there were plenty of other players that were doing the juice and whatever who are probably in the Hall of Fame, who won it. Ryan Braun stole the MVP from Matt Kemp in 2011. And there was all that, remember that stuff about the handler and his urine sample and how it was getting, you know, the drug test that he failed. It was this whole saga. Okay, Matt Kemp should have won the MVP. Okay, So, again, Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, they are the, like, oh, they're horrible. Like, they're like the Astros. Like, we have a few individuals who, when we look back, Roger Clemens, and we say, oh, they're the bad guys. But then you have other guys who we know, names we know, that likely or did, or David Ortiz failed a drug test. And so you have other guys who we are big names who could very well be guilty of performance-enhancing drugs. And you probably have some other guys who we never even have heard of, just how we probably have some teams who, for all I know, the Kansas City Royals could be stealing signs right now. Like, my point is, steroid use was very widespread across Major League Baseball, just the same way I'm sure sign stealing was very widespread across Major League Baseball under Rob Manfred. So, Bud Selig, I don't want to hear you or, in this case, Rob, when they look back on, yeah, you know, like, I probably, you know, shouldn't have done that with just the Astros. No, you screwed the whole thing up by enabling it on such a larger level, just the same way where, Bud Selig, if you're going to care so much about PDs, then clearly you've enabled an era to happen and wanted to reap the benefits out of all the economic boom that the steroid era gave you coming off of the strike in 94 and everybody needing to see the home run chase between Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire and then everybody needing to see Bonds hit the ball into McCovey Cove. And it was wildly entertaining as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, commissioners that oversaw such, you know, checkered eras, let's say, and, you know, black marks on their resume, don't try and backtrack and give yourself a report card on how you handled it, because quite honestly, it's not going to do you any good. And honestly, as I mentioned with the CBA stuff and Rob Manfred, had there been legal action taken by the players' union and by those Astros that he did suspend, they, for all we know, they could have won. Like, so, in other words, Manfred's life could have been even more frustrating for himself during the whole investigation if he suspended them. It's like, this is his way of trying to address something that everybody just, it's a little bit of a lazy thing. Oh, like, why did the players get immunity? You should have just suspended them. And really, we all just need to move on because the Astros won the World Series last year anyway. So I think this also goes back to a point that I made yesterday in a different kind of connection. But my point was with the Tyreek Hill investigation about he's under investigation again for assault and battery, and he's had a lot of off-the-field domestic violence problems. And my point was we should not just prop up guys who are really good athletes, and we shouldn't always make heroes out of them when we don't know who they are off the field. Well, in this case, we should not always assume that commissioners of sports and that a sport on the whole, even if we like it, is doing everything right. There could be things going on in the NFL and Major League Baseball that I don't know about right now that are maybe morally looked down upon. But it's not for us as fans to try and police that. It's on the commissioners, and if it becomes widespread enough to where then fans are mad, the commissioner has failed. And sign stealing was an example of that. I mean, geez, like, how could there have been some kind of ambiguity in the CBA to begin with? Like, if you're Rob Manfred and you're the Major League Baseball owners, when you're negotiating that CBA, wouldn't you have said, gee, you know, sign stealing, we don't want that. And there's a lot of technology that can get in the way for that. So if players are guilty of violating our sign stealing principles, then we should be able to suspend them. But the CBA didn't explicitly state that. And so Rob's life would have been probably more annoying for himself and more frustrating when all this was going on. Mind you, it came out during COVID when you had those COVID CBA season negotiations going on as well. To where there's no way he looks good here. All right, a couple things with the NBA draft that annoy me every year. That's next. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.